A Question of Courage by Jack Hodges. Chapter 1. A Noise in the Night. It was the middle of the night, and I was in a forest in Africa. There was a hungry lion in front of me, and another hungry lion behind me. I had a rifle in my hands. I lifted the rifle and prepared to shoot. But at that moment, the rifle changed. It became an old pair of trousers. The lion in front of me smiled. It had long, yellow teeth. That was when my wife woke me. "George, there's somebody downstairs," she whispered. "Wake up." She shook me again. I am awake," I said. "What time is it?" "It's 4:30, she said. 4:30 in the morning?" I asked, still half asleep. "Yes, of course, you fool," she answered impatiently. I rubbed my eyes. "I heard a noise," Daisy continued. "I think it's a burglar." "It can't be," I said. "It's only your imagination. Go back to sleep." "No, I'm sure that I heard something," she said. "You must go down and see." But... At that moment, there was a noise downstairs, the sound of something falling. "You see?" said Daisy. "Now go down and have a look." Slowly, I got up. I looked for my slippers, but I couldn't find them in the dark. "Go on," said Daisy. "What are you waiting for?" I went to the door of the bedroom. As I opened it, Daisy said, "Be careful. Maybe he has a knife or a gun or something." I went quietly out of the bedroom. I was afraid, of course, but also still half asleep. Perhaps that's why I didn't turn on the light. I went down the stairs, thinking, maybe she's right. Maybe somebody dangerous is waiting downstairs. How can I defend myself? At the bottom of the stairs was the hall. There was a small table there. The telephone was on the table. Next to the telephone, there was a metal statue of Winston Churchill. It was small but heavy. It showed the hero of World War II holding a big cigar in one hand and making the V for victory sign with the other. It was a horrible thing, really, but it was a present from my wife's mother. That's why it was there. I lifted the statue and opened the door of the living room. Suddenly, there was a movement. I saw a dark shadow, then more movement. I threw the statue at the shadow. There was a cry of pain, then silence. I turned on the light. The burglar lay on the floor, unconscious. His bag lay next to him. I saw some of our things in it. Then I looked at the burglar again. There was something very strange about him, something very unusual. Then I saw what it was. Oh, my God, I thought. I heard Daisy coming down the stairs. She came into the living room and looked at the man on the floor. Oh, my God, she said. He's a dwarf. Chapter 2. An Important Question. We called the police and they called an ambulance. They all arrived at the same time, about 20 minutes later. There were two policemen and two ambulance men. "Well, sir," the older policeman said, "can you tell us what happened? In your own words, please." But before I had time to open my mouth, Daisy began to tell the story. The policeman listened patiently, shaking his head up and down. "I see," he said, "I see." He took a small notebook out of his pocket and began to write in it. Then he turned to me again. "What's your full name, sir?" he asked. But again, before I could speak, Daisy said, "George Thomas Bumlington." The policeman turned and looked at Daisy. He smiled sadly and said, "Your husband looks very pale, Mrs. Bumlington. Why don't you make a nice cup of tea? I think he needs one." "Oh," said Daisy, surprised. "Yes, all right," and she went into the kitchen. Nobody spoke for a few moments. We all looked at the burglar. He was still unconscious on the floor. Next to the ambulance men, he looked very small, like a little child. One of the ambulance men lifted him gently and put him on a stretcher. "Can we take him to the hospital now?" the ambulance man asked the older policeman. "Yes, of course you can," the policeman answered. As the two ambulance men carried the burglar out of the room, the policeman looked at him carefully. Then slowly he looked at me. He asked, "How tall are you, sir?" "I'm 1 meter 87," I answered. Yes, I see, he said, writing in his notebook. He didn't say anything else. It wasn't necessary. His thoughts were obvious. So, this burglar attacked you, he continued. Is that right, sir? No, no, I answered. He didn't attack me. I didn't say that. Ah, said the policeman. So you attacked him, with this statue here of Winston Churchill? Yes, sir, no, I said. Well, not exactly. It was dark, you see, and I was afraid. I mean, everything happened so quickly. Well, somebody attacked him, said the younger policeman. If it wasn't you, who was it? I didn't know he was a dwarf, I said. I didn't want to hurt him. It was dark. It was dark, sir, because you didn't turn the light on. Is that correct? The older policeman said. That's very strange, you know, because usually when people are afraid, they turn the light on immediately. It's the first thing they do. It was obvious they didn't believe me. They didn't believe my story. At that moment, Daisy returned from the kitchen. I heard all that, she said. Look, that man broke into our home. He was a thief, a burglar. My husband defended our home. There's nothing more to say. Yes, of course, Mrs. Bumblington, the older policeman said. Of course he was a burglar. Nobody questions that. The question is, why did your husband hit him? That's the question here. Your husband is a very big man, and the burglar, well, as we all saw, is a very small man. So why did your husband hit him on the head with a heavy metal statue of Sir Winston Churchill? Was it necessary? That's the question. The policeman stayed another 2 hours. They asked the same questions again and again. Finally, they got into their car and drove away. It was 7:30, time to go to work. This is terrible, Daisy said. What a catastrophe! What are the neighbours going to think? What are people at work going to say? They're going to laugh at me. That's what's going to happen, and it's all your fault as usual.
Chapter 3. A Bad Mistake.
All my fault, I said. What do you mean? Well, you're the one who hit him, Daisy said. You're the one who wanted to be a hero. Now that poor little man is in hospital, he's probably fighting for his life. Ha, what a hero. That's absurd, I said. I never wanted to be a hero. Stop it. I don't want to hear another word, Daisy said impatiently. Listen, George, you mustn't tell anybody about this. But why? I didn't do anything wrong. Oh, you're so stupid, she said. You don't understand anything. Because people are going to laugh at us, that's why. A giant like you, nearly killing a poor little dwarf. Don't you see how ridiculous it is? But, did you hear me, George? You aren't going to tell anybody about this dwarf, not even Bruce. Do you understand? At that moment, the doorbell rang. Oh, who can that be? Said Daisy. I looked out of the window. It was Bruce. Bruce was one of my friends. We worked at the same factory. Every morning, he came to my house and drove me to work in his car. I opened the front door and Bruce came into the living room. What's happening? He asked. I saw the police car outside a few minutes ago. It's nothing, Daisy said. Aren't you going to be late for work? Nothing? What do you mean? Said Bruce. You don't have police cars parked outside your door for nothing. So what's happening? Did you rob a bank or something, George? Oh, well, said Daisy, if you must know, we had a burglar. And George hit him, and he's in hospital. And that's all. Bruce turned and looked at me. His mouth fell open. For a few seconds he couldn't speak. Then he said, George hit a burglar? Ah, George? It was obvious that he was surprised. Everyone knows that I'm a quiet person. Yes, Daisy said, our George, and if you don't mind, it was a horrible experience, and we don't want to talk about it. Well, 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 said Bruce. I don't know what to say. I really don't. That's fantastic, George. There's too much crime these days. There are too many break-ins and robberies, and the police never catch the thieves. So maybe some of them are going to think twice now, thanks to you. But I must say, George, I am surprised. I always thought you were a gentle giant. I didn't know you were the Arnold Schwarzenegger type. I felt sick. Wait till they hear about this at work, Bruce continued. You're going to be a hero, George. Daisy looked at her watch. You're going to be late, she said. As Bruce and I went out the door, she called my name. George! I stopped
and turned round. "Remember what I told you, George, about the you-know-what? Not a word to anyone." She gave me one of her dark, angry looks. "Promise me, George," she said. "But Daisy," I said, "promise me." "Oh, very well," I said. It was a big mistake. Chapter 4. A Hero for a Day. Soon, thanks to Bruce, everybody at the factory knew, or thought they knew, because they didn't know everything, of course. I didn't tell them how I felt. I didn't mention the you-know-what. I had the impression that they couldn't talk about anything else. "Tell us all the details, George," my friends on the shop floor said again and again. "No," I said, "I really don't want to talk about it. A burglar broke into our house and my wife heard a noise and I went down to look. After that, everything happened so quickly and now the poor man's in hospital. That's all I can say about it." "That's typical of our George," they said, "the modest hero, the strong, silent type, like Clint Eastwood, eh, George?" "No," I said, "it wasn't like that at all, believe me." "Oh, George doesn't say a lot," they said. "He knows that actions speak louder than words." Some people thought like Bruce. "There's too much crime these days. Thieves, drug addicts, terrorists. We need somebody to teach them a lesson." "Well done, George," they said. "With men like you around, an Englishman's home is still his castle." All day long I heard, "Well done, George. Bravo, George. Congratulations, George." People I never saw before wanted to shake hands with me. The manager's secretary asked me, "Do you mind if we write a few words about it in the company newspaper?" For 11 years, I was invisible in the company. Now, suddenly, everybody knew me. The receptionist and secretaries smiled at me and said, "Good morning, Mr. Bumblington." It was a horrible, horrible, horrible day. I felt completely sick because I knew the truth, all of it. I knew that what everybody thought was false. At lunchtime, I went to the canteen, as usual. When I went in, everybody was very silent. Then they all started singing, "For he's a jolly good fellow." At the end of the song, everybody applauded. "Oh, my God," I thought, "why is this happening to me?" My face was as red as a tomato. After that, even more people wanted to shake hands with me and congratulate me. "But what for?" I thought. "What for? I didn't do anything." But every time I said that, I heard, "Don't be so modest, mate. It took courage to do what you did last night." At last it was 6 o'clock, and I could escape. As usual, Bruce drove me home in his car. "What a day, eh, champ? What a day," he said. "I'm not a champion boxer," I said, "so please don't call me that." "Tomorrow's going to be interesting too," he continued. "Why's that?" "I heard some secretaries talking," Bruce said. "One of them was the manager's secretary. It seems that the manager wants to make a little speech in the canteen tomorrow. He wants to congratulate you publicly. Maybe he wants to give you a medal, eh, champ?" "Oh, no, 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 no," I thought. "This is becoming a nightmare." That evening, during dinner, Daisy seemed unusually happy. "All the neighbours know that you put a burglar in the hospital," she said. "I was at the supermarket today and I heard two ladies talking about it." "But it's ridiculous," I said, "and it's false." "At last we're getting a little respect," she said. "What's ridiculous about that?" "Daisy," I said, "I can't continue like this. I'm going to tell them about the dwarf. I'm sick of all this talk about heroes. It just isn't me, you see. It's false, untrue, absurd." She was silent for a few moments. Then her face became very dark, like the sky before a storm.
You, she screamed. "You only think about yourself. You never think about me."
"I'm sorry," I said, "but I can't let this farce continue. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to become myself again." Chapter 5. A Different Man. I didn't sleep well that night. I was too worried about the next day. But in the morning, Bruce came to get me as usual.
"Sleep well, champ?" he asked.
"Don't call me champ," I said. "My name is George." He looked at me in a strange way. "OK, George," he said. "Sorry, mate."
That morning, when people asked me about the burglar, I told them, "Wait until lunchtime."
Finally, lunchtime arrived, and I went into the canteen. The first person I saw was the manager, Mr. Nesbitt. He walked up to me with a big smile on his face.
"Why don't you come and sit at my table, George?" he said.
Everybody watched as we walked down to his table at the end of the long room.
"Sit here, George," he said, showing me a chair.
Then he cleared his throat and a loud, clear voice started his speech.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we are honoured to have someone here today who..."
I stood up and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Nesbitt, before you say anything else, I want to say a few words." He looked at me in surprise.
"If you don't mind," I said.
"No, no, of course not, George. Please, go ahead." He sat down. For a few seconds, I didn't know what to say. I could see everyone was surprised. The large room was very silent. Everybody watched.
"Ladies and gentlemen," I began.
My voice started to shake.
"Speak up, killer," somebody shouted. "We can't hear you at the back."
I took a deep breath and started again. "Some of you think that I'm some kind of hero. Believe me, I'm not." To my surprise, everyone applauded. They thought it was more my modesty. And I didn't know how to continue. Suddenly I felt very angry.
"Listen, you fools," I shouted. "I'm not a brave person, and I'm not a violent person. I don't like violence. In fact, I hate it.
The other night, as you know, a burglar broke into my house. You all seemed to think he was some kind of dangerous criminal. Well, he wasn't. Not at all." I stopped for a moment.
"He was a dwarf," I said.
"A dwarf, a very small person. Not dangerous at all. A dwarf." I stopped again. This time I didn't see any laughing faces. Everyone was shocked. They looked at me in deep silence.
"I'm sorry I didn't mention that detail before," I continued. "That was a big mistake. I hit the man by accident. It happened because it was dark and because I was afraid. I'm not a hero, you see, and I don't want to be one. I'm just an ordinary person, and that's all I have to say. Thank you."
There was total silence in the room. Nobody applauded. Nobody even spoke. I walked back down the long room and out the door. I took the afternoon off from work and went to the hospital.
"Good afternoon, sir. Can I help you?"
a nurse at reception asked me.
They brought a dwarf here yesterday morning," I said. "Can I speak to him?"
"Ah, yes," she said. "That's Mr. Shaggart. He's in Ward 48 on the top floor." I had a long conversation with Mr. Shaggart.
"Call me Tiny," he said. "Everybody does."
I told him I was sorry for hurting him. He said he was sorry for breaking into my house. He also said, "You didn't hurt me badly, you know. They want to keep me in one more day for observation, but I'm going home tomorrow."
"I'm glad," I said. "I hope you aren't going to have a lot of problems with the police."
"No, don't worry. It was my first time, you see, and my last." We shook hands and said goodbye. I walked home slowly, thinking about things. When I opened the front door, the first thing I saw was a statue of Winston Churchill. I lifted it, took it outside and put it in the dustbin.
"What are you doing?" Daisy screamed. "Something I wanted to do for the first time I saw that horrible thing," I said.
Daisy looked at me in surprise.
But, "I don't want to hear another word," I said. "I'm too tired. I'm going to have dinner, read the newspaper, and go to bed early, I think."
Daisy didn't say anything. She just looked at me in a strange way. Her mouth was open.
"Oh," I said, "and if you hear any noises in the night, don't wake me. You go down and have a look."
That night, I was in the dark forest in Africa again. I saw a lot of people with rifles, but they couldn't see me. I smiled at them. I had long, yellow teeth.